Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal in New York City. Hey, it's January 24th, 2017. I'm a little distracted because we have such a great bunch of guests here in the studio. First of all, we got the boys from KCBC, Kings County Brewers Collective. Everybody, say your names, please.
Hey, Tony Bellis.
Pete Lingell.
And Zach King.
And our good buddy, Katarina Martinez, soon to open Lineup Brewing. How are you, Katarina?
Wonderful. How are you?
And the guy who's the glue of the show, Dave, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Dave from Arcane Distilling.
And he's been doing some special projects, distilling beer from some of these breweries and in New York City. So,
including the guys in the room.
It's great to have you guys on. You know, and First Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. You know, I think I had you guys on 2 years ago, Tony and Pete and Zach, just when you guys were starting out. But, like, you know, 2 years later, just give us a quick summary of where KCBC's at. Your tasting room's open. It's in Brooklyn, the Jefferson stop on the L train. We were just there before Christmas. Who wants to give us a kind of a, you know, quick summary of where you guys are at right now?
I'll dive in with that, Zach, here. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind.
But it's going really great. We are functioning and brewing and selling and brewing more beer. Honestly, it's been going really well. The response has been really positive with our beers. We're on batch number 35 right now, I think, give or take. It's been really fun. It's been really hard, just balancing the tap room, managing that business, the distribution and sales, and then also obviously the production. But with three of us together, working together, I think it's been pretty fun, you know?
I know. I'm really proud of you guys. I know you self-distribute. You deliver regularly to Jimmy's Number 43. And are some other New York City bars that you guys are distributing to regularly?
We're in a bunch, man. I mean, you know, in this neighborhood, you know, we're literally, or in this literal building we're in, Roberta's, where we are right now. They've got our Robot Fish IPA on tap pretty regularly. Pine Box Rock Shop also in the hood. The Rookery, The Well. A lot of places in Manhattan as well. You know, the Ginger Man, Beer Culture. You know, we're even up in Queens, Long Island City, Alewife. You know, Milk and Hops, Astoria Beer and Cheese, some places like that. So, you know, anywhere where there's really good beer, if they don't have our beer, tell them they should buy our beer. Seriously.
Well, we went to the tap room right before Christmas. It was cool. We had a show. And I went over there with Tony Forder from Mail Street News and Hillary, our NYU grad student, went over. And it was the New York City Homebrewers Guild Party, you know. So there's a lot going on between having a brewery and a tasting room. But, like, I want to talk about beer styles with you guys because I feel like a lot of the new breweries in New York City are kind of establishing certain styles for themselves. Like, you've had the Robot Fish IPA here on at Roberta's a lot. But for me personally, and some of my staff – many of my staff live near you out in Jefferson Stop and the L train, or they're working at Jimmy's Number 43. Yeah. This summer, they all talked about the Stoop Sale Kolsch.
Oh, yeah.
There was a recent pills you had that I went nuts for. Which one was that?
Was that the Strap Hanger or the Janiac?
The Janiac.
The Janiac Maniac, yeah. That one's named after our landlord, and it's just a hoppy German-style pilsner. It's really tasty.
One day I was with Aaron over at The Well, and I tasted the Janiac Maniac pills, and now you guys have the Strap Hanger out, the Rice Lager. Let's talk about those styles. So as you guys, as brewers, I know you're making more than one style, but it seems that you know people are recognizing your Kolsches and pills and lagers. What's behind that? And let's talk about if you have a philosophy of your beers or if just that I'm getting lucky trying.
Well, we want variety first and foremost. And there's three of us brewing, so we're bringing that to bear. And lagers is kind of still unique in the craft brewing movement, and we're definitely doing a lot of those. Sour beers, hoppy beers, classical styles, we're all over the place. So
But yeah, the lagers have been fun. I mean, you know, it is. They take longer. You really got to be anal about all of your sanitation and all of your precision in brewing, which Pete, as our kind of lab production expert, is really kind of the king of that. And this strap hanger, it's kind of a cool experiment. We hadn't done a flaked rice lager before, but Pete was like, let's try it. And, you know, it's got about 22% flaked rice, give or take, in the mash. Otherwise, it's just Pilsner malt, about 35 IBUs worth of Hallertau hops. So it does have a lot more bitterness than your average sort of light adjunct lager. But it's just crisp and...
4.8% ABV, highly carbonated. Super crushable.
And Pete, yeah. The last time you were on, we had Sebastian Sauer. We were talking about, you know, the Reinheitsgebot, the laws in Germany.
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can break them. But great American beer. There's American beers being made with rice and corn. Oh, yeah. Who wants to talk about that as an important part of American brewing?
I mean, you know, that was part of brewing culture. And I think there was a little bit of a, you know, somewhat of a backlash, you know, in the early craft beer days of, you know, focusing on, you know, all malt beers, but, you know, using things like rice and corn and other adjuncts, you know, historically were part of, you know, traditional brewing methods, and, you know, that we like that. I mean, you know, 95% of our beers are all malt beers, and, you know, we're not using things like rice and corn, but this is a cool experiment. We love it. We, you know, like, yeah, like you talk about your staff liking it. We're brewing this kind of stuff, and especially like we love drinking lagers. They're nice, you know. It's a shift beer. You know, yeah, it's what you can drink a couple of while you're working at the end of the day.
Yeah, this is kind of an anti-IPA. You know, it's like it really is like the opposite. You know, I mean, you know, there's nothing against IPAs. We love them. They're awesome. We brew a lot of
four or five of them on tap in our tap room right now.
But sometimes you just want not a hop bomb. You just want a crisp, light, easy, crushable beer.
So this is the KCBC, the Strap Hanger Rice. Pete wants to say something.
Oh, just going to say you can't listen to heavy metal all day long. Well, you can, but sometimes you want a little.
You can.
If you're Tony, you can.
Our buddy Ethan's out there. He's logging in at Beer Sessions Radio for Untappd, trying to keep track of all the beers. Let's mention a couple others to get them on Untappd. So the Stoop Sale Kolsch.
What else do we have?
Nico Cremitas, Wrap Up of the Year beers. I picked the Stoop Sale Kolsch.
Oh, Stoop Sale Kolsch. Yeah, that one came
out.
What's
the backstory on that?
There's backstory on that was kind of fun, actually. We started out, one of the things that Bitter Nestor started like last year was the New York City Pro-Am. And so Bitter Nestor is a homebrew shop here in the city, and they're
shout
awesome.
Shout out to Bitter Nestor.
Yeah, John and Doug. What?
Please.
Shout out to Bitter Nestor.
And then someone said,
What?
John and Doug, my boys.
John and Doug, yes.
JD.
So what they do is they pair up homebrewers with professional breweries in New York City. And, you know, the homebrewers and the breweries get together and come up with a recipe and, you know, come up with something new. And so we were working with Phil Clark, longtime homebrewer, you know, from, you know, Bronx of Westchester, you know. And he was talking about, he does a lot of meads and stuff with honey. And so we had this idea of doing a honey Kolsch, and you know, kind of on a whim, we split the batch up, and one of the batches I dry hopped it pretty heavily with some New Zealand hops called Waiiti, which have kind of a lime citrus note. Added that version to me came out awesome. So we decided to scale that up, and that was basically what Stoop Sale was. So pretty tasty.
That's great, man. So keep an eye out for that. Yeah. When's that batch going to come out again? In the spring?
You might see that coming around in the summer or something.
Yeah, spring, summer, or something like that. Yeah. I feel like it's a good Kolsch season, you know?
Let's jump around. And Katarina, welcome to the show. I think it's your first time on air, Beer Sessions Radio.
It is.
And we know you as a...
Yeah, what's up, Lineup Brewing?
A long time award-winning home brewer. Oh, yeah. And you're soon to open Lineup Brewing.
Correct.
And it's very soon coming.
Yes.
What's your take on these guys? Because it seems like, you know, first you guys, I know
you guys
all came up through the homebrewing world. And I think you've all, what else?
They're scared about what I'm going to say right now.
You can tell they're all friends.
I mean, they get me drunk very often because I just kind of live there in their tap room. So in general, though, they were homebrewers first, and they know so much about beer. And as I've gone through this process, they've helped me a ton with all of that. So anytime I have a question about you know, anything from the actual process to are you guys billing people? You know, like things like that.
Yep.
They know. So it's like, or marketing or like shirts. So there's just so many different pieces, and it's awesome to have them, like they're able to help me along the way.
While we wait for you to get fully licensed, we hope we'll have your beer for New York City Beer Week.
Correct.
Which is coming up February like 24th to March 5th.
Right.
But so you're here, you're going to ask questions. You're kind of our beer expert.
All right.
Okay. They're all beer experts. That's the thing about this group.
Yeah, I mean, saying that in this group is like is definitely a compliment. Oh my God. These guys are great, obviously.
Well, it's kind of neat. It's like the beer experts are also now making beer, which is kind of great.
Yeah.
So cheers to the beer experts.
Cheers.
And one more special guest. So, Dave, you're on the other side. You're a distiller, and you've been doing some cool projects with the breweries. Just a quick overview of what you've been doing, which breweries you've worked with.
So I run Arcane Distilling, and I specialize in making beer whiskey. So I run a little program called Lone Wolf, and Lone Wolf specializes in taking it specializes in taking beer, fully finished beer,
Lone Wolf,
and turning it into whiskey. So I've worked with these guys a couple times, but I mean I've worked with Strong Rope, I've worked with Inderboro, I've worked with Other Half. I mean I've really.
That's where I met you last. I was picking up some beer at Strong Rope.
Oh yeah,
and you were there with your beer. And then when I was at KZBC for the holiday party, you were there too. So how did this start up? I mean you go in, you would take a batch of beer, and distill it.
So, I mean, as any good brewer will tell you, as any good brewer will tell you, I mean, beer is super delicate. I mean, it oxidizes quickly, it breaks down over time. You know, like, you don't want to store your hoppy beers warm. We're looking at you, Whole Foods. What I wanted to do was make a process that prevented any of the degradation of these beer flavors and then concentrate it into a whiskey. So I wound up making not just a whiskey, but a beer whiskey. And the only way to do that is using vacuum distillation. So I'm actually able to distill at pretty much room temperature. So when you're drinking a beer, it doesn't really, you know, spontaneously turn into crap. But if you were to boil it, you probably wouldn't want to drink it anymore. And I wouldn't want to make whiskey out of that.
And we're going to taste one of your KCBC.
There it is.
Distill it soon. This is the David soundtrack.
But
a couple of questions for you guys. So setting the stage for the show is our first segment here. So Pete, Tony, and Zach, originally the Kings County, I hate to bring it up, but Kings County Brewers Collective was actually like a loose collective of homebrewers. And you guys aspired to do something.
It's going to be more like an incubator initially, and that was kind of the, I mean, Tony can talk about it a little bit more. I think he was there from the very, very, very beginning of this sort of germ idea, you know.
Pete and I both.
Pete was there too, yeah.
Yeah, just tell us a little background on that, because I also, a number of those guys are also, have their own breweries now too.
Yeah, I mean, Pete and I met drinking homebrew at a concert, and then met, you know, start talking with other brewers in the, you know, beer scene, homebrew scene in New York City. Throwing around this idea of, you know, this kind of incubator nano brewery kind of thing, and ran into Pete again a couple of years later. You know, long story.
Who are some of the guys that were part of that?
Long story short, so yeah, like Jason Saylor, who's doing Strong Rope, and there was two other guys who aren't brewing professionally, but I bet will be, not living in state anymore. Initially it was like five people, and we had this idea and started kind of hashing through and doing some meetings and putting together this business plan. And quickly into it, we sort of, you know, as you start realizing like the economics of starting a brewery, realize that like, that's going to be really hard to do, you know, on a small scale with five people. I mean, I think that was the gist of where we kind of hit that wall.
And what if each person had their own brand, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think we, you know, kind of came to some, you know, general consensus of like, this might need to work a little differently. And Pete and I definitely clicked on the idea of, you know, and Pete having already gone to brewing school, and I was just registering to go to the American Brewers Guild Brewing School for their brewing science program. You know, I think I kind of gone through some of the exercises of, you know, putting together a business plan and, you know, what's the average size brewery that people open up. And we kind of clicked on the idea of we need to make a little bigger brewery, you know.
So it was originally like a home brewer's utopia.
Yeah, and then quickly realized that, like, you know, the challenge of that is just, you know, juggling multiple brands and having multiple people and multiple, you know.
Yeah, and what if someone's beer sucks, you know, so.
Sorry, yeah.
I hate to say that, but.
Yeah, so we had those conversations. So long story short, we decided let's do something bigger, more focused on the collective brand of Kings County Brewers Collective as a brand and focus. You know, the differentiator is that it's different people brewing and showcasing their, you know, unique brewing talents and their, you know, brewing style.
And, yeah, I mean, and thank God these guys, you know, kind of came to that realization, because honestly, you know, like the, you know, I was sort of peripherally involved in looking at trying to do a brew pub on my own separately, and that had fallen through. And, you know, being able to work with both Tony and Pete, who have this, you know, professional experience, and you know, came to the realization that to do it on a certain scale, you know, is really economically the best way to do it in a city like New York, where you're paying these, you know, crazy rents, and, you know, you just got to make ends meet, you know, and try and make a living out of it. So
that's great. Hey, you know what? We're enjoying this KCBC Strap Hanger Rice Lager.
Boom.
We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Right on.
Yeah.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, what a group we have. KCBC, Kings Woo! County Brewers Collective. Yeah, hey, yeah. Great new brewery in Jefferson Stop, L Train.
Bushwick.
Yeah. Is that what you call it? It's like Jefferson Town or something?
No, we're not going to call it.
No, we're not calling it. We're just calling Bushwick. It Bushwick. Yeah. It's just.
That's what the real
estate guys. I really dug, like, a lot of times I come out here and there's certain beers I drink, but I just drank your Strap Hanger Rice Lager. And just reset. I say this a lot. Reset my palate. Nice. Now that's all I want to drink.
Yeah.
How do you do that as a brewer? How do you make someone like addicted to your beer, Pete? Because you've been doing
drugs mostly. Just put some drugs in.
Just add a little drug. It really does come down to you know, balance is critical. You know, and again, I mean, I think when it comes to recipe formulation, you know, we try to give each other some flexibility at KCBC and like let each other do our own things, but we also, you know, help each other out and learn from each other, I think. And we're able to try so many different beers in a short period of time. And we've cranked out a lot of beer in a short, you know, in the first 4.5 months.
There must be like some kind of house style. Because, like, for example, going back like 10, 11 years, remember when Six Point first started?
Mm-hmm.
All their beers had a certain, it's like if I drank Six Point, like my palate worked, and then I couldn't drink something else. And then when Barrier started out on Long Island, the same thing. Mm-hmm. My palate would adjust to Barrier, and that's all I wanted. And I feel like certain breweries have that. I don't know what you call that.
House character. We're House actually character. Trying to avoid that.
But being
three of us, well, maybe eventually it will go that way. But I think for now we're trying to avoid it and explore what the three of us can put out there. And we're using different yeast. We're using different malts. We're using different techniques. So for now, we don't.
So
have
you call it house character.
Yeah.
So what would that be? That would be like certain yeasts, or
I think mostly the yeast probably, and technique, and maybe base malt.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for a small brewery or any brewery, especially yeast, to juggle the number of yeast strains in your brewery. And like, you know, right now we're juggling four different yeast strains in a brewery with seven fermenters. And that's really challenging. And I don't think there's a lot of breweries on average that do that. Like most breweries will have an ale strain and a lager strain if they're doing lagers. Mm-hmm. And if they're, just doing ales, they may have
an ale and a Belgian, something more funky.
And it's costing us a little bit more. We're, more often than, we're buying new fresh pitches of new styles of yeast more often and or just new pitches of yeast, and that's expensive. But I think that's, I think from day one, that was one of our real conversations, even Pete and I, going back 4 years, about that house character. I hear Pete saying house character. It's like in my head, and it's no, it is. It's but it's
house character.
House character.
House character. Character.
And
out of my head, Pete.
Yeah, and I think the three of us, for the most part, kind of we go away. We talk generally about like, hey, you want to make a pale ale recipe? Okay, cool. Go do it, and then come back and usually just kind of throw a recipe at the team and say, what do you think of this? And sometimes everybody's like, yeah, let's do it. And sometimes somebody's like,
sometimes people will be like, Zach, you really want to put 40% flaked malt in the mash? Maybe that's a little too much,
because I'm brewing it. So I think we definitely collaborate on a lot of stuff, just and I think I already just find myself growing, just getting their influences on brewing. I think we're all doing that, but also I think sort of, I don't want to say isolating ourselves, but I think it's nice sort of just be able to brew what you want and not be like, well, we can only buy these, these malts. We are not limiting ourselves to anything. So
it's hard to pin down that thing. I think that you're talking about though, Jimmy. I don't know. What is it that makes really good beer just really drinkable? Again, taste is so subjective. There's so many different elements going into beer. It's the carbonation, it's the balance, it's the bitterness, it's the malt, it's the yeast, it's the aroma, it's what temperature you're in right now, all these things, I don't know. I'm just excited to hear that someone thinks our beer has like that kind of hook, That's pretty awesome,
No, that's great, man. Cheers to you guys. And then the new beer we're drinking now, who wants to introduce?
This is Dangerous Precedent. it's an IPA. It is hopped with Mosaic, Azaka, and Cascade hops. So you got a little of that old school Cascade, but also some of that new school, the Mosaic in particular. Juicy, it leans tropical. It's got, it's fermented with Vermont ale yeast. So it's got some of those extra peachy esters there, I think, on the nose. It's got enough bitterness to keep it from being a total juice bomb, but we thought it would make a really good beer whiskey. So, we handed off a little bit of this beer to Dave to distill, he's pouring this right now. I'm so excited.
That's what I want to know more about. How does that process work, guys? So, Dave, you've been to how many different breweries in New York City and distilled beers?
I think at this point it's how many have I not been to.
Usually it's late at night. There's like a dark car with the lights off. We throw the keg out.
Yeah. I've done so many different styles. I've done a lot of IPAs, but I've also done a lot of like stouts and some really creepy stuff like sour beers. Like you don't throw a sour beer into a traditional still. That's just a recipe for a disaster. But using the vacuum still, I'm actually able to leave all the acid untouched in the boiler. And actually, so
let's step back. Let's just say like a old school whiskey in Scotland. I know that they brew these kind of basic beers that they would just distill.
Sure.
Tell us what that process is and how what you're doing is different.
Well, if you're talking about traditional process where you're going to make a spirit that's meant to be aged, you want it to be kind of dirty. You want it to have a lot of character going on that is going to be pretty nasty if it's young. But if you give it a couple years, it's going to be great. And
I'm drinking the beer whiskey from the bottle.
Yeah, right.
I was like, damn.
There's a pause there. That just happened. There's a pause.
It's Jimmy style.
That's Jimmy style.
If that's your goal, there's no problem with that. So you're using a pretty basic mash. It doesn't have a whole lot of individual character going on. Really doesn't matter what grain you use. And you're going to want a lot of these like volatile acids and aldehydes and esters, and they're going to react with the wood over a couple of years, and you get a final finished traditional whiskey. But if you try to do that with beer, just the hops alone, you do not really generally want to distill hops. They get really acrid, really bitter, really vegetal and nasty. I mean, it's a rule of thumb. You don't distill with hops.
Like the base beer, like sort of like a Scotch whiskey. The base beer is really just like kind of a kind of a quick ferment of like
It's usually pretty low alcohol. It's usually pretty dirty. It's usually open fermented in the case of traditional whiskey.
It's even a different grade of malt. There's distiller's malt.
Right.
There's brewer's malt, the highest grade, distiller's malt, and then feed grain.
Yeah. There you go. Pete summed it up for me.
Boom.
So it's
you know what Pete thinks about beer. Top of the line.
Nothing lower. But if you're going to use something like beer, which is finished and beautiful, you don't really want to fuck it up. And also, if you think about it, my Lone Wolf whiskey is probably the most expensive whiskey by base, because you're using a sixtal of fully finished craft beer to make only 7 to 10 bottles of whiskey. So it's sort of doubly so, don't fuck it up.
But fully worth it. It's delicious.
So yeah, so what you're drinking now is actually the distilled version of their Dangerous Precedent.
Why don't you talk about it? Because there's definitely a nose to this whiskey that is not like a typical whiskey.
What's so wonderful about this whiskey is it captures all of the flavors that that Zach was just describing in the hops. So I immediately get mango, which is wonderful. This whole process, and if you go in and watch Dave do it, he, at any point in time, he can pull, a sample, and it's pulling a different flavor from the actual beer, whether it be the malt or the different hops along the way. And it's really actually kind of magical. I'm not going to lie. I've watched him do this for a while, and, it's actually part of the reason.
He also does it in the nude.
Yes, he does it in the nude.
That's why it's called Lone Wolf.
Yeah,
But so you guys, as brewers, what do you think of his distilled version of your beer?
Oh, that's amazing. And drinking them side by side, it blows the mind.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could think of it almost as just a 7 times concentrated version of their beer.
It's so intense. Yeah. You do not get whiskey that I've never had any sort of whiskey that smells or tastes even remotely like this.
Yeah.
Dave, how did you get started in this?
I build. I mean, kind of. Yeah, I feel like I've been locked up for a couple of years, but I build distillation equipment, and I specialize in things like efficiency. So I build machines that are very small, very efficient, very effective. But I really wanted to get also into the isolation of flavors, and I love beer. I loved beer before I loved spirits. I homebrew, and what I realized is, and I've had some other beer whiskeys. I'm not the first one to make beer whiskey, but they're usually treated as traditional whiskeys. You know, they go into a barrel. The good ones go into a barrel for like 7 years. The crap ones go into barrel for like 30 seconds. And it really bothered me, because you take something really beautiful, like a fully finished IPA, and just make it brown. And it's like, well, I'd rather just drink the IPA. So the goal here was to treat this almost like perfume. And the systems that I build, the vacuum systems, are what you would use to make something like perfume. So it's a much more delicate process for beer than I would use for regular whiskey.
Are there any other distilled beers that you'd recommend, or that you've
drank? I used to really like the Rogue Dead Guy, which they made whiskey out of for a long time. It was a very malty, very sweet whiskey, and I liked it. It reminded me kind of like a Highland Scotch. But as craft whiskey has gone on, you see these younger and younger and younger and younger and younger whiskeys, and they lose a lot of the potential of it. I mean, they were making a traditional process whiskey with all of the warts. And if you don't put it in a barrel long enough, it's going to taste like woody nonsense.
Woody nonsense.
Yeah. Hashtag.
I've joked about making a whiskey called Woody nonsense.
Oh, you should.
So, yeah,
I think I might. I think I might.
I think we could go on with this forever. Definitely go down the rabbit's hole.
Yeah.
Talk about it soon. But going back to what you said, Tony. So, Tony, you guys started a brewery. You know, what's a good size brewery for someone to start with that can actually make them money and grow with?
I mean, we like our size, you know. although now that we're doing it, yeah,
we should probably be a 500 barrel.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, we do it kind of like Sierra Nevada is doing it currently. Our size we think is great. 15 barrel brew house, 30 barrel fermenters. We have 7 fermenters.
5,000 square feet of space.
5,000 square feet of space. I mean, you know, our you know, back of the envelope math is that we could probably do about 8,000-ish barrels out of that space. Probably having to rent some space to, like, store kegs and do barrel aging and that kind of stuff. It's not a large brewery compared to what a lot of people are doing elsewhere in the United States, and especially considering that we're probably... You know, we may be paying the highest rent per square footage out of any brewery in maybe the United States.
Maybe the world.
It's possible.
It's possible because I think...
Brooklyn real estate. If you don't know Brooklyn real estate, guys, Brooklyn real estate is kind of pricey.
Even the next couple of breweries that are opening in Brooklyn right now have better deals than we do.
Damn!
But we chose a location that was, you know, it was very, you know, specific, and we paid a little bit more because we're... a block away from a very high traffic subway.
Jefferson stop L.
Yeah.
381 Troutman Street. We're open Tuesday.
You can walk there like not, you know, that's
our tap
not
room's
even half
open.
A block.
It's okay to do on the air, Pete.
Tap room's open Tuesday through Sunday for all your drinking pleasure. We have crawlers to go and bearded.
And I think we're going there after the show. But hey,
yeah.
We got one more short break. And again, what's the beer we're drinking right now?
Dangerous Precedent.
And the whiskey, too.
All right. We're back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Ow!
Lone Wolf! Come back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is a wild, lively crowd here. KZBC Kids and Katarina Martinez, soon to be Lineup Brewing, and Dave Lone Wolf, Arcane Distillery. So, Katarina, you brought some beers. You're from Colorado. You know a lot of
Colorado.
Big yes. Shout out. Of course, everyone in this room made, you know, accolades as home brewers. You took the BJCP class. You've been part of Homebrew Alley and Josh Bernstein's Homebrew Jamboree. So you know your beer, I mean, there's no question about it. So you brought some beers back from Colorado. But you're from Colorado. Do people from Colorado know more about beer than anyone else?
Absolutely. No.
Well, let's see. What did you bring us?
I was born in California, so I have a lot of friends down south in San Diego, when they come into town, I brought the head brewer of Ballast Point out here to KCBC to hang out with these guys. I have some good, you know, good people that I know that are awesome.
God knows good people.
I know a lot of good people. So Colorado is just about beer, like, all of the time. So that's where I got started. One of the beers that I brought actually is from Upslope Brewing, and that was what really got me into beer in Boulder. I went to school there, did like a marketing project with them, and they paid me in a sixtal of their IPA. And,
so let's pour that and let's have everybody
I've
talk
about
it. I've
actually had this. I was in Boulder not too long ago, and I've had this. I was at Upslope.
This, okay. Yeah.
Really? None for Dave. Okay. He's had it.
Dave doesn't get it.
We got to share all that.
Sorry.
So what is it? It's Upslope what?
So it's Upslope Brewing. It's an Imperial India Pale Ale, an IPA, obviously. And they started really small, and they started with an IPA. and a pale ale, and that's all that they actually had on tap, and I would just spend all of my time there. I might have not been of legal age at the point in time that I was doing this, but...
This is live radio.
I mean, no, I was super 21 when I was drinking their beer. But they you know, they definitely helped me out.
As a, you know, you're about to be a commercial brewer, pro brewer. Do you have a question for the KCPC guys about a brewing process or any other question? You must have a lot of questions about how to run a brewery operation.
I ask them all of the time. And a lot of it, you know, surprisingly enough, it doesn't stem from the actual process. It stems from more the business side of it, since I'm running both, right? So I'm brewing the beer and I'm doing the business side of it. And it's a lot of things like that. So
it's hard.
I've learned along the way, each one of these gentlemen are good at something. So or bring something to the table. And
we're lucky
so,
in that sense.
Dancing.
Yeah.
So when you open, come on again. When you open soon, you're going to have beer.
Yes.
So is there going to be a tasting room, or are you going to deliver the beer?
Yeah. So I guess we haven't addressed that yet, but I'm here with Dave, and we share a space in Industry City Distillery.
We share a wall.
He hears all my music. I hear all of his music. It's wonderful. He hates it. I get to wave at him when I walk by. He usually doesn't wave back because he's busy.
But too cool.
You know, Dave is a lot of the reason why this brewery started is because he was going to distill beer, you know, and we were like, hey, let's start beer within here, and you can distill the beer, and then we'll distribute it as well.
So it's at Sunset Park, Brooklyn. So you have a space where you're distilling, brewing beer and distilling spirits.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean.
But the same spot, are you guys?
No, they're two separate spaces. Yeah. We literally share a wall.
As you guys talk about collective, you guys are sharing. And Warteg is there too, right?
I should say that Cat and Wartega Brewing, so Lineup and Wartega are sharing equipment. Arcane's totally separate, but totally down to party.
he's not so lonely.
But again, so this is a collective type where you're kind of the same space.
Yeah, well, we didn't want to use the word collective because there's these guys that already use that. Yeah. So we felt like it was like weird and janky. But no, there's Industry City Distillery that has vodka and you know, a bunch of different limoncello and things like that. He has the, you know, Fernet and the beer whiskey, and this all, and then we have the beer. So it feeds into the same tap room. That's absolutely beautiful. If you guys haven't been there, you should go. It
super
overlooks.
Cool,
really awesome.
Yeah,
beautiful.
It's really cool. Speakeasy looks over Statue of Liberty. Like it's an awesome space. I'm like super excited. I fell into it, honestly. So, cause we have taps there and my beer will go on tap there.
Yeah.
And then in addition, I'll be distributing. So if I were to ask them a question, they already have answered the questions I've asked them have a lot to do with, distribution.
Just ask one again.
one again.
Ask a question
a new
that you've
one.
Asked
hey,
them.
Can
we don't
Let's
count
a question.
Okay.
No, actually it's more what, you know, I mean, interestingly enough, Kat, along with Merlin Ward from Wartega and, you know, Dave sharing this space in Industry City, is kind of doing what we started talking about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and so what made you decide to start on this scale, you're like your one barrel system, right?
Yeah.
You kind of have balls that we didn't have. We're too afraid to do it on that scale. It's work your ass off and not super scalable, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. What was your decision to start off like this?
So I still am working full time at Adobe. I work
smart.
In software engineering. And I,
super
it was
smart.
More,
day job.
Super smart. But I,
don't
you know,
do it.
It started as like, it was like a cool side thing that's really just taken over.
Yeah.
It wasn't ever intended to just be a side thing. It was intended to scale, but, I work for a lot of startup companies, and to start small, it is very important. I also own everything that I have, so I don't have any investors yet. That's another startup thing. I wanted to hold the controlling stake, and I still do. So that is why I started small. And then if I do intend on scaling, which I absolutely do, I'll have to take investment. And that's exactly what you guys are doing. But instead, I built the brand from the bottom up, and it's different than the way other people are doing it, but it's actually working out pretty well, I think.
I totally get it. Proof of concept.
Yep. Yep.
Not too much outlay of cash in the get-go. Get the brand established,
right,
and then go from there.
Yeah. You could still potentially go and win like a GABF award or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I absolutely intend to. It's going to happen.
Just one award.
I mean, we'll see what I what I submit next year. So, I intend on winning a bunch of awards.
There you go. There you go. I mean, you know, it can work any way. You know, I mean, like that's the thing. Like, there's so many specific circumstances. I think when it comes to actually starting a brewery, it takes giant balls, no matter what scale you do it at. But the ability to do it, period, I think is awesome, and we're stoked that you're almost there, Kat. Almost there.
we're at the SLA and we're going through TTB right now. So
cool.
We'll be there for New York City Beer Week. I have a bunch of collaborations coming up.
Sweet.
One with Great South Bay. We're making a chili chocolate milk
Lineup
stout.
Brewing, right? Lineup.
Lineup Brewing.
Everyone knows you. You've been out there in a lot of articles already,
yep.
And you know, your Pink Boots Society, and you know.
Yep, yep.
So, congratulations. Good luck.
Thank right? you. Yeah. Cheers.
So, we're still going. We're not done yet. So, one more beer.
Oh, yeah.
Pete, introduce
more
this
beer.
One, buddy. Come on.
Oh, hold on. Tony brewed this beer. So.
Tony.
Oh, okay.
These guys are polite, right, Kat? I mean, for guys, like,
know, very
there's
polite.
Three guys.
Very
polite.
I mean,
they're polite.
Oh,
they share the brew equipment.
They're sure, amazing.
Do you guys
they're
actually
amazing.
Share the brew equipment, or do you fight for it? You know?
we just all, I don't know what
Well, you do have a brew commander.
You ever seen Fight Club?
Right? Yeah. Every morning we just fight for it, and whoever.
But Zach's the brew commander?
We all are the brew commander.
That's your dorky name, brew commander. What are you, Pete?
Wait a minute, dorky?
I'm brew commander as well.
And I'm also brew commander. So,
I know,
so,
right? There
so,
it is.
Three dorks making beer.
Three dorks.
Three dorks brewing.
Three dorks brewing.
And why is that not taken?
What we're drinking right now is
Fight Club.
This is our imperial stout called What We Don't See. It's an 8.5% imperial stout.
Black.
It is dark and menacing. Yeah, pretty easy drinking imperial stout. Pete made a really cool, you know, stout that we've been crushing. That's the baby brother. This is the big brother of Rainmaker. And, you know, there's just a roasty, has some crystal rye in it. It's got nice, you know, kind of smooth sweetness to it.
I'll take some more. I like this.
Yeah. Smooth. Yeah. I mean, this is a great winter beer. You know, we were doing, you know, Dave makes this amazing Fernet at Arcane. And, he gave us the idea of doing a little dab of Fernet inside of the Rainmaker Stout.
Yeah, over Christmas, that's what we were doing.
Yeah, and I can't wait to put some Fernet in this Imperial Stout because I think it's going to be great.
Luckily, I brought some.
Oh,
so
we can yeah.
Do that. Yeah.
Oh,
wait, does Dave, do you actually advise the breweries now on what beers they could make that would actually be good whiskeys?
Honestly, I mean, similar to Kat, I feel like I'm sort of a denizen of the breweries. I'm just that guy that's sort of hunkered down at the bar going, this is really good. I should do something with this. So it's more like there's so much innovation going on in brewing in New York City very specifically. I mean, one of my favorite beers to ever turn to whiskey was the Finback Massive. And you wouldn't originally be like, oh, well, it's a big porter. What are you going to, like, what's it going to taste like? It was a huge, malty, roasty, chocolatey whiskey. And that really set it off for me, where it's like, oh, don't just focus on one thing, go for them all. So I definitely, I don't necessarily advise. It's more like I find what is awesome and then utilize it.
Okay, so you made a Fernet, you know, Blanco, whatever it's called. It's hip and trendy. Restaurant waiters, bartenders, chefs go, I want Fernet. It's very bitter. I mean, I'm a fan of, you know, Amaros and bitters myself, but, why'd you make a Fernet from beer?
It doesn't actually contain beer, this one. But I made it because a lot of my friends that are in the beer world drink Fernet. I made it originally as a dare. Some guy basically bet me that I couldn't make Fernet, so bet me a beer, and I like beer, so I made this. But then I realized that I don't actually like Fernet Branca. So I asked all my friends that drink beer, Robert, Cheryl, if you're listening, thank
Shout
you.
Shout out to Robert Cheryl, Colby
Holland.
It was through input from the Fernet drinkers of New York City of which there are many, that I came up with this recipe. And beer drinkers don't seem to hate it, I have to say.
We drink the shit out of it.
And you have cool distillers like Dave and Jesse Ferguson over at Interborough Spirits and ale or beer?
Ales and spirits.
It's cool that there's, you know, a lot of distillers that are coming from the beer side of things, and these worlds are crossing and collaborating, and we're getting these cool new things, you know.
Let's do a New York City beer quiz. I put it on social media, but okay, a couple of questions. So we asked earlier, who are the original members of the Kings County Brewers Collective? Mm-hmm. We talked about that. So now just brewers in New York City, because there's so many. I'm going to say a brewery, and you guys say who is actually the brewer at these breweries.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, ready? Other half.
Sam Richardson, well, but it's Pete not Salmon. It's Pete Salmon.
Salmon.
Yeah.
So it's getting
Hi, Peter. I love you.
What's HBP? What's up?
Interboro. You said it.
Jesse Ferguson.
Finback.
Basil.
Kevin
Stafford. Kevin's definitely Both. Kevin Stafford.
You guys are getting Basil-y. What's up?
Mike and Steph.
Excited.
Little Basil-y.
Yeah.
This is good.
And Kev.
Yeah, what's up, my brother?
Bronx Brewing.
Damon?
They have
know.
So many. I even like dated one. He's the worst, but he's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's the next show. Who you dated? That was.
That's
well,
why it's called
say his
lineup.
Name, but that's why I know that is why it's called lineup.
All right. let's move on. What's the next brewery?
You guys pick. Call him out. 6 Point.
Kier.
Kier's cool, right?
Kier's
yeah,
cool.
Man.
Kier's
awesome.
Great. That guy,
Rockaway.
Man.
Oh, Kier, actually, we made a whiskey
Ethan.
With them, too.
Ethan, Ray,
yeah,
Robbie.
There's a few of them.
Greenpoint
Robbie,
Beer.
Captain, yeah.
Greenpoint is Eric.
Eric.
Yeah.
Gunhill.
Yeah.
Chris Prout.
Kelly Taylor. Represent. Yeah. What's up, Kelly Taylor?
Yeah, KT. And sometimes Chris Kuzma.
Sometimes.
Chris Kuzma.
Yeah.
And that's good. We got a good start. That's what I wanted to ask you. More beer quizzes next time coming up. So any last things? Thank you. And last quick run-up, we're pushing ahead to New York City Beer Week.
New York City Beer Week is going to be awesome. Honestly, check out the opening bash. It's going to be really, really killer. It's going to be a ton of breweries there. There's all kinds of things going on that whole week. Check out the New York City Brewers Guild website. It's awesome. Seriously, support New York City beer. We're all going to be all over the place supporting our bars and restaurants. Drink beer.
And last thing, tap rooms. Importance of tap rooms. KCBC, I was at your tap room before Christmas. You know, what's it? You talk about beer character, but what's the character of your tap room that works?
I mean, it creates the culture of our brand, I would say. I mean, there was from day one, we talked about, you know, this is the other thing I hear Pete in the back of my head going, I want it to feel like Browery Lane. Like this sense of community and place.
In your head, Tony.
And, you know, this place where people can go and just feel casual and welcome and warm. And it's like, I think it's, you know, really what we're striving for is this neighborhood drinking spot that doesn't feel, you know, too pretentious, too divey, and just like a cool place to
And
hang
it's
out.
Worth the rent because it's right off the Jefferson stop on the L
so
train.
Close. So close.
And it's
so easy.
That's
and
my
it's
new
cool
hang, guys. We're going there.
381, Troutman.
Clean, so, crisp.
One more time. Delicious. Let's do a wrap around. Everybody say your name and affiliation, and we'll close this out.
Zach Kinney, KCBC.
Katarina Martinez, Lineup Brewing.
David Carreco, Arcane Distilling.
Lone Wolf.
Pete Langell, KCBC.
Tony Bellis representing KCBC to the fullest.
I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast tonight. Big shout out. Beer Week's coming up. The dean of all the events is New York City Brewer's Choice. I know you guys will be there. It's March 1st, a special downtown Brooklyn location. It's still the gem of them all. It's a small event.
That's the one to go to.
40 brewers and great chefs. But again, check it out, New York City Brewer's Choice. com, and it supports Heritage Radio Network and Beer Sessions Radio. So thanks, y'all. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to producer Justin Kennedy and our engineer,
Justin?
David Tatasciore. Thanks for listening. See you next time on
Beer Sessions Radio.
Woo!
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.